The Tom Woods Show, episode 1546.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, Christmas is coming, so be inspired by the very first gift I ever gave to our friend Michael Malice, a Harry's holiday shave set. Listeners to my show can get $5 off any Harry's shave set, including these limited edition holiday sets, by heading to harrys.com/woods. Free shipping ends on December 16th, so act now. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Before we jump into our topic for today, I just want to mention a little something from the news, and it's not something I could make a whole episode out of, but yet if I don't say something about it, it's going to make me crazy for some reason. I don't know why this struck me the way it did, but some of you may have seen this news item about Joe Biden, who has been the presumptive frontrunner in the race for the Democratic presidential nomination, and questions have arisen as to his fitness for the office. I mean, even his fitness to run a decent campaign, whether he has the physical wherewithal or, more to the point, the mental agility to carry it through. But yet this news item is not about that. It's just about the thinking behind some of his decisions. So he's got this bus, this travel bus, campaign bus that he's going to ride in, and it says Joe on the side of it in huge letters. And then it says, no malarkey. Now, basically, you have to be a certain age to use the word malarkey anymore. In 2019, nobody's using that word anymore. And I have spoken to numerous people under 30, every last one of whom said, I don't even know that word. I've never in my life heard that word. So people have been making fun of him for this. And I even made fun of him on Twitter. I said, there's Joe. You know, he gets hipper all the time because, you know, those young people, I always hear them saying malarkey nowadays. So what could they possibly be thinking? He's as out of touch as can possibly be, has been made clear over and over. Why is he cementing it with that ridiculous thing on the side of the bus? And then it occurred to me, amidst all the making fun, that this may have been deliberate. That, yeah, they know that it's sending a message that I'm an old guy. But I think what's happening here is that Joe has written off the youth vote. Because no young person's voting for Joe Biden in the Democratic primary. That's absolutely not happening. And I think he's accepted that. So he figures he might as well dig in and claim his natural constituency, which is old folks. And unlike young people, old folks actually show up to the polls. And, you know, every 4 years you get a candidate who says, well, this year we're going to get the young people out. Well, no, you're not, because for whatever reason, they don't vote. They don't vote in significant numbers. The oldsters, they vote. Right? If it's they are going to vote for more war and slavery, if it's the last thing they do, no matter what it takes to get them out to the polls. Now, I know they're perfectly good old people. I'm not saying all old people are this way. I know people listening are smart enough to know that that's not what I'm saying. Although I will note that I heard Ron Paul not long ago say, you know, just old people just don't support me. And he just frankly noted that. Now, he's not a collectivist. That doesn't mean that he thinks every single old person is an opponent, but he's just making an observation, making a generalization about reality. So I think that's a little sign to these people that I'm your guy. I'm old-timey Joe Biden, and I use old-timey, homey phrases like malarkey, you know, no malarkey. I think it's a deliberate thing. I think it's actually a smarter move than people realize and that I gave him credit for. Now, I don't think it was his idea. I don't think he's able to think at this level of sophistication, but I think the people around him are not as clueless as we thought. That's actually not such a bad move after all. Anyway, enough of that malarkey. I haven't heard that word so long. It was just funny to see it written out. It's also one of these words you say, you don't write it. Nobody writes out malarkey. There it was. All right. Today, we're back from Thanksgiving, and I want to talk to a gentleman who lives in Argentina, originally from New Zealand, whom I've learned an awful lot from over the past several years, and that's Aidan Booth, who is an extremely successful entrepreneur with employees all over the world and numerous businesses and owns properties all over the world, is in, I believe, his mid-30s, we'll verify that, but has just had incredible success and doing something that has nothing to do with what he learned in his formal education, which I think puts an exclamation mark after what he's accomplished, because it really does blow up the traditional narrative of you go to school and they teach you the skills you need to go out and succeed. Okay, I'm not saying that's impossible or that never happens. In some specialized fields, that is what happens. But in his case, he learned a field that has nothing to do with what has made him millions and millions and millions. So I wanted to get his story. I mean, basically, I'm doing this somewhat selfishly because, as I said, I've read this guy's blog for a long time and followed him on Facebook and stuff like that, and worked with him too and learned an awful lot from him and competed with him unsuccessfully in various ways. So if you can't beat him, join him. I want to get a little bit of his story, and I think it'll be of general interest to you folks. So Aiden, welcome to the show. Oh, wait, actually, Aiden, before I bring you on, I don't think I mapped out the plan of action here very well. I want to take some time to go through his personal story, but then I want to run through the different kind of business models that he's pursued and get the pros and cons of each one, because that may also be of some use to some folks. So, okay, now let's say it. Aiden, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here, Tom.
I want to take half this episode to talk about your personal story and then the other half to pick your brain a little bit. I guess I've known you for, beginning of next year, it'll be 4 years, but even before that, I did follow you. I knew about the work you were doing. I would follow your blog posts. And even since knowing you, when I could just send you an email and ask you a question, I still opt in sometimes when you offer a free giveaway. Like I was saying the other day, you had a thing about travel hacks, and I do a lot of traveling. So I had to opt in to get it. It was a free giveaway. I had to get it. And then one of them was a particularly helpful thing about how to get upgrades at Las Vegas hotel rooms. And I thought, oh, I have to know how this works. I just have to know. So I did eventually talk to you about that because I wasn't sure if it would really work. And now I feel more confident about it. But anyway, so in other words, I've been interested in the little things and the big things that you've been doing. And you're in, what are you, in your mid-30s? This is going to depress me.
Yeah, mid going on late 30s.
Okay. All right. Well, that's just what I wanted to hear. Well, anyway, the reason your story is interesting is that, first of all, I know you. And secondly, the things you've accomplished are pretty impressive that you've done entirely with, you know, the kind of business that you could operate from anywhere.
Right.
And you indeed have operated it from anywhere. You've lived all over the place. You now live in Argentina. We'll get to that in a minute. But although I've had certain milestones and goals that I've had for myself, like, you know, I'd like to have a day where some big project I do pulls in X dollars or something like that. Well, you've had a day when you brought in $2 million. You've had over 10 days when each of those days you brought in $1 million. That's, you know, that's a little bit beyond the aspirations that I've had. So good for you. But then also you do a lot of other things because I know you have properties. Apparently you have like 17 different properties in various parts of the world. At one time, you had over 1,500 websites that you were running. So I want to disentangle this and figure out how you went from a guy on a sheep and beef farm in rural New Zealand to this master of the universe living in Argentina. So can we start in New Zealand? I mean, when you were a kid and I presume you went off to school, but did any of the schooling you had, did it have anything to do with the work you wound up doing?
Yeah, well, so firstly, I'm definitely not a master of the universe, and I'm also an avid listener of your show, Tom. So believe me, I'm sort of stalking you as much as you're following my blog post as well. So that's a two-way street there. But my background, yeah, I grew up in rural New Zealand, so on a sheep and beef farm, as you said. The nearest town was about 30-minute drive away, small town, 20,000 people. And just a working class, middle class family. My mum was a school teacher. My dad, a farmer, and that was how I grew up. And you know, back then, even probably until I started studying at sort of midway through college, even then, I still really had no idea of this whole, you know, you could build your own online business and work from anywhere. So it was definitely not something that I ever imagined I would end up doing. That's for sure.
What did you imagine that you would do? What kinds of things did you study?
So I studied an engineering-related degree, and I think it was just kind of hammered into me that I would go through school, then I would go through college, and then I would get a job, hopefully a good job, and make money. So I knew that, you know, studying technology and engineering, there would be opportunities. I thought there was a safe and steady route to take. And so that was what I was doing. My first job was I was managing a production line in a big factory in New Zealand. And then my second job was in a cubicle managing supply chain. So about as far away as I could get to, you know, the freedom and flexibility I have right now.
Well, how did that come about? Did you just walk in one day and say, take this job and shove it? Did you have something already lined up? That's the thing I always would be worried about. Do I have something lined up already, or am I quitting and crossing my fingers and hoping everything works out?
Yeah, no, I definitely didn't have a master plan. What I know happened was I did a ski season in Lake Tahoe, California, in 2003. And that was where I met my wife, who is from Argentina, and she was doing the same thing at the same time. So we were up there in our summer break, being from the Southern Hemisphere and enjoying the winter in California in the Squaw Valley up there. And after that, I sort of decided, look, I want to go back to Argentina and see if this thing works out with my wife. And in Argentina, you know, I loved it over here. I'm still here now, you know, whatever, 17 years later, whatever that is. But I realized that, look, I can't speak Spanish. I'm, you know, up to my eyeballs in student loan. I need a way to make money. And it really needs to be online, because if I'm tied down to one place, if I'm in New Zealand, then I'm not going to be able to be in Argentina, and I want to travel and do all this other stuff. So I kind of went down this rabbit hole of investigating and studying what could I do online. And that led to all kinds of weird things, some of them that you sort of hinted at the beginning there.
Now, this is all back in, so what are we talking about here? It was early 2000s that you met the woman who became your wife. And then what year was it that you went? Yeah. Okay. So what year was it then that you started working completely on your own?
I started my online business in 2005, and I managed to go full time with it 2007, 2008, around there. So it took me, I would say, 2.5 years of sort of doing it as a sideline gig. Because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. So,
Yeah, that's the usual sort of thing. All right, so a little later on, I'm going to get into the specifics, a little bit more specific of exactly what you did. But just give me a basic outline. What was the first kind of business model, let's say, that you were pursuing? And did you have any false starts, like you were trying to do something that after months of working at it, you realized this just doesn't work, or there's no market for this, or whatever? Or was it all successes?
It definitely was not all successes. I've had more false starts than most people probably. But what I did to begin with was I was buying these camera SD cards for digital cameras. I would buy them on eBay and I would ship them over to New Zealand, and then I would sell them on the New Zealand version of eBay. So that wasn't really online marketing. It wasn't really an online business. I was just kind of like a middleman. But when I was in Argentina and I really kicked things off, I switched to attempting to do affiliate marketing. So selling other people's products and making a commission, essentially. And yeah, I mean, with that, I failed miserably for quite a long time. But little by little, I started learning and I started finding different sources of information online, and I guess just getting better at it, and little by little, you know, making more money.
So affiliate marketing was the first model that you really got into?
Yeah, that was the first thing I really got into.
Other than the other thing. Okay. Yeah. So why didn't you just stick with that?
Why didn't I?
I mean, why would you branch into some? I mean, for example, like where I am right now, I do some affiliate marketing. I have my own products. I have a podcast, you know, whatever. Now, there are numerous other business models I could also follow. I could start an e-commerce store and drop ship stuff from China, whatever. But why would I? I've already got a functioning business and I'm already doing well. Why would I add more to it? So why did you branch beyond what you were doing?
Yeah, so I think with what I was doing, I was able to systematize things quite nicely. So I still have a multi-million dollar affiliate marketing business. And much of that is what I started in 2007, 2006, around about that time. So it's still in existence. But I think for me, it was diversifying. I realized that selling physical products was something that I could do and scale quite nicely. So I got into that. Even local marketing, I realized that that was something I could do and enjoy, and I got into that. But at each turn, always approaching it with the objective to systematize and then step away, or in some cases, even like sell. So, you know, I sold something like 1,500 different websites and just a couple of transactions. I sold one e-commerce store for, you know, $150,000, and it was a baseball related e-commerce store. So it's either, you know, set it up to sort of run on autopilot on its own and be self-sufficient, or look to sell it. And that's kind of always what I've done.
Were you teaching yourself all this stuff? Because in my case, I've taught myself some of it, and then I've paid to have other people teach me the rest.
In the early days, I was trying to teach myself, but I soon learned that it was kind of like the slow path, because there was just so much that I didn't know. So I would say that my biggest gains that I've had and the fastest results that I've had have been when I've had some kind of a mentor or at minimum, sort of a recipe to follow. And that's when I've been able to tap into other people's expertise. And then, you know, once I learned the system, put my own twist on it and then try other things out as well, you know, to work in conjunction with whatever it might be that I'm doing.
So let's see, as the years go on, you obviously, you go from maybe simpler thing. I don't know. Would you say you're going, because were the sort of websites you were creating, like you're talking about, you had a baseball related e-commerce store. And then I think some of these other websites you had were seasonal, like they had to do with Halloween or Christmas and things like that. And right. I assume you just had products on them that you were earning commissions on. You weren't actually making these products.
Yeah, I think, one thing about affiliate marketing, it's a great business model and everything, but at the end of the day, you are not in control of every part of the process. So I guess that's one of the downsides, and there are plenty of upsides to affiliate marketing, believe me, but that was one of the downsides, and I wanted to be more in control of every part of the process. And the reason for that is because, you know, I had a few, I'd say, sort of epic failures along the way when I let my destiny rest in the hands of other businesses. And one example of that is, you know, Google. We were selling a lot of physical products through our own stores and sending a lot of traffic using Google ads. But then one day I wake up and the Google account, you know, I got that horrible email saying that my ad account got shut down. And to this day, I don't know why, because we were just selling the most mundane, boring physical products, not doing anything funny at all. But that was a good example of, you know, when, you know, my destiny is in the hands of, you know, a company like Google or, you know, Facebook ads and things like that, you're not really in complete control. And the same with affiliate marketing. So I've had it before where I've been successfully selling something as an affiliate, driving a lot of traffic, making a lot of money, and then just out of the blue, I can no longer sell that product because the terms and conditions have changed. Or in another, you know, few cases I've had where the commission changes. So perhaps I was selling something for $100, making $50 commission on each sale, and then all of a sudden they just changed the terms and I'm making $20 a sale. So, you know, these are the things that can happen when you're not in control.
Right. I mean, that actually reminds me, if people are long time listeners of the Tom Woods Show, they remember early on I promoted a coding school called Code School. And I did that on an affiliate basis. They didn't know who I was. They weren't paying to advertise. I did it to earn affiliate income, and it did really well. And then one day, they just shut down the affiliate program altogether. That was right. It. I was doing great. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, nothing. So you'll notice all of a sudden, it just stopped on the show. That's why. I'm not going to promote them for zero. But also another thing that would be out of your hands is, I think these days, as we're talking at the end of 2019, Google tends to downgrade content-thin websites, which basically a lot of these affiliate sites tend to be, that if you're selling Halloween products as an affiliate, there aren't like lengthy blog posts about the pros and cons of each item. And so Google downgrades that. So it's hard for people to find you. You got to find other ways to drive the traffic. And I think that would just be a pain in the neck to try to do.
Yeah, it's absolutely the case. And, you know, there was another, you know, you mentioned thousands of websites. I had 1,000 websites just in the Halloween niche, and they were what we call exact match domain names. So I had the likes of spidermancostume.com, and anyone who wanted any kind of a Spider-Man costume, they would come to my website. We had kids' costumes, adults' costumes, even baby costumes. And we had this for a lot of different characters that were the rage. So SpongeBob SquarePants and everything you could imagine in between. But they were quite thin sites, like you're saying. They didn't have an enormous amount of value, because how much value can you add if you're just writing about, you know, a Spider-Man costume? I can provide all the different sizes and stuff, but if it's not my costume or my product, then I'm somewhat limited in what I could do. And the writing was on the wall, really, with Google. They even came out and said, look, you know, we want to encourage this kind of a thing, not this kind of a thing. And they were pushing people, especially affiliate marketing, in the direction of being more value added. And it was just time for me to change direction, really.
Well, let me tell just a quick tale of woe, but it's not pointless. I learned something from it. I have a digital product that I've had for 7.5 years now, libertyclassroom.com, and it does really well. And it's still going strong 7.5 years later. But at the 5-year mark, I wanted to have a special blowout sale. And the 5-year mark falls on obviously a specific date. It was April 9th, 2017. So I prepped my folks to expect a big, big blowout sale that day. So that day, over and over, April 9th, April 9th, April 9th. And that was when I was going to have a really big sale that I thought would bring in a lot of revenue. Now it did, but the problem was that, I kid you not, that exact day, I get notified by Facebook that my ad account has been shut down. On that exact day. And I thought, well, what? Geez. And they said, because of some kind of suspicious activity. What are you talking about? Well, sure enough, they looked into it and they realized it was their error. Of course, there's no suspicious activity. I hadn't even been using it. I don't know where that came from. So 3 days later, they reinstated it. But that doesn't do me any good. So I couldn't very well say, well, I'm going to delay this a few days. I had been hammering home April 9th like a fanatic. I had to go through with it. So I had to do it with one hand tied behind my back. And that's when I said to myself, well, I guess I'm going to find out today whether email marketing really works, because that's what I've got left. And when I realized just how well it worked, and I just hadn't been doing it right up to then, I realized I don't need these extra platforms as much as I thought. I have built something that I own, that is my own thing, namely my email list. And it turns out that does way better than some Facebook ad would anyway. Now, I still am going to use Facebook ads because they make me money. But it reminded me of the importance of having your own platform so that if push should ever come to shove, it's not the end of the world. If one platform either changes its rules or it's taken away from you for some reason, you can still hang on. And by the way, this happened to me on Amazon. On Amazon, I got an email saying my affiliate account had been shut down. I mean, can you believe this? I got an email saying my affiliate. And at that time, I was earning a lot from Amazon affiliate stuff. I don't earn as much anymore, but I was earning a lot from Amazon affiliate stuff. And they just shut it down with no recourse. So I called them, and they have these people who are supposed to deal with the affiliates, and their job is to say nothing, is to be as uncooperative as possible. I said, well, what did I do? I mean, just give me a hint. What could have gone wrong? What did I do? They couldn't give me an answer. They wouldn't reinstate me. So I went to my audience, which is a huge audience, and I said, does anybody, does any one of you work at Amazon who could do a manual review of my account? And sure enough, somebody stepped forward and said, yeah, what's going on? I said, they took my account away. They didn't tell me why. And he looked it over. He had some people look it over. And they said, yeah, this was our mistake. There's nothing wrong with your account. And they reinstated me. Now, I was lucky, Aiden, that I had a big audience. If I was just Joe Blow, I would have been devastated. So although it's great to use big platforms when you can, you should use anything that's available to you. In the background, the lesson that I've drawn from all this is make sure you're also at the same time building something that belongs to you. And there's no greater thing that belongs to me than my email list. So even if the skies should fall, I still have that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with any time you're leveraging Google or Facebook or Amazon or any of these big companies, it's not a case of if something like this is going to happen. It's only a case of when. I mean, eventually it happens to everyone. And I'm not trying to scare people off, you should still use these things. But just be aware that, you know, you don't want to be that one trick pony that's only got that one, you know, method up your sleeve kind of thing. It's good to diversify, have different traffic sources, different income streams, and own as much of the process yourself as you can, because that's really where you get the freedom. You own your own email list. That's yours. You can do what you like with that. You can switch from one autoresponder to another. I mean, you're in control.
All right. Now, I want to ask how you get from where you were. So you, once you settled down, so you still do affiliate marketing.
Yes.
And you're doing some e-commerce stuff. You also do training programs. So
yes.
We'll talk about all those things in a minute. But you, with your money, you then diversified to the extent that you've got all these properties.
Yep.
Now, what is the role financially for you, in addition to your online businesses, holding properties? And how do you evaluate whether a property is a good investment for you or not?
Yeah, so I think my view on property is that it's where I like to store my wealth. It's not how I generate my wealth, but it's kind of like my bank. It's how I store my wealth. And the idea is that that appreciates in value over time. So what we started out doing was buying properties in New Zealand, where I'm from, and we got to a point where we had quite a lot there, I think 14 or 15 different properties that I actually held freehold, so no mortgage or anything like that. And we wanted to diversify, and I got a couple more in Argentina and went on to buy four, you know, pretty nice condos in Manhattan now. So, again, the idea with these is that they are good places to store my wealth, but they're not, it's not my business. It's not how I generate my wealth. I think for me, I've always been interested in having passive income. And I believe that lots of small streams can make a pretty big river. So that's also why, you know, I've got this diversity happening online, different businesses online, and, you know, some bring in more than others, but collectively they do well. And property is just sort of part of that portfolio. Okay. It's also my fallback plan. You know, if something went wrong or there was some major change, I know that I've got that as my insurance policy now.
Yeah, that's terrific. All right, here's something men know already and a lot of women don't know. Men get a lot of crappy gifts at Christmas. Ties, wallets, and socks over and over again. Well, how about a gift that's both thoughtful and practical? The very first gift I ever gave to our friend, longtime guest Michael Malice, was a Harry's Holiday Shave Set. Harry's makes sharp blades that last. They've got 100% quality guarantee. Holiday sets start at just $20. That's within Secret Santa limits. Comes ready to gift in a handsome gift box. And your gift gives back. 1% of each sale will be donated to charitable organizations. As a special offer for fans of the show, we've partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off any shave set, including their limited edition holiday sets, when you go to harrys.com/woods. Plus, you'll get free shipping. Each Harry's shaving set comes with a weighted handle with option to engrave. 5-blade razor cartridges, foaming shave gel for a rich lather, travel cover to protect your blades, and packaged in a handsome holiday gift box. Free shipping ends on December 16th, so act now. Just go to harrys.com/woods. That's harrys.com/woods. All right, let's take a few minutes to go through pros and cons of different things people might do. And let me start off by just saying that kind of the business model that I have recommended, now not to the exclusion of others, there are a lot of different things people might want to do. But just because of the sheer simplicity of it, and because you could start doing it literally today, you could get started doing it, is the simple one of you find some niche, and preferably one that you enjoy and you wouldn't absolutely loathe having to be involved in day in and day out. So preferably something you like. And you have to take some time to evaluate whether it's a profitable niche. The fact that there's no competition in it might actually be a bad sign, right? It might mean, right. Yeah, there's no competition because there's no money in it. So you have to be clever about this, but you come up with some niche, you go to message boards or forums or whatever, websites and blogs, and you find out what kinds of things are troubling these people, what kinds of things keep them up at night, what problems are they trying to solve, and you come up with the answer. I mean, you research it, you know, whatever you have to do to do that. Because half the time, a lot of the things that people want to learn, they're just too lazy to look it up. You know, you can easily find it. So you package something into like something simple, a checklist or a list of resources, helpful resources. Or it could be a video or a video course or an ebook. But I have a friend who has tested all these at his business. And he says, you know, you would think like the big video course would be the thing people would want to get. But honestly, I just came up with a checklist, and that did much better because most people realized I'm never going to go through this video course. I know that, so I'd rather just have this little checklist. So anyway, you devise something, and you offer that to people for free in exchange for their email address. So there's some work involved. It's always going to be work. But once you have that email address, now you can follow up and market to them other things that you can find. You know, you can market to them products that you earn commissions on. You can find these products at, let's say, ClickBank or Flex Offers or Share a Sale or any of these sorts of places. And that's it. So it's you offer something for free in exchange for an email address. You use a service like Lead Pages to have a little squeeze page that you just collect the email address on. You use an autoresponder service like AWeber, like I use, to then follow up with people with more offers. You know, now you have to know what you're doing. You have to email the right way. You got to email like Woods does and not just constantly badger them with, hey, 50% off this brand new product that is exactly like the product I promoted to you 2 weeks ago. You know, can't do that all the time, right? But that's the simple, simple, simple model. Now, I've seen among my listeners that generally when they start, when they have an online business, they tend to gravitate toward print on demand. You know, where they've, because they've got some niche and they make t-shirts and mugs and clocks and whatever it is, because they can, it's easy for them to visualize what that involves, you know, what's involved there. They can visualize themselves doing it. Same with e-commerce. It's easy to understand. If you have a Star Trek niche sort of e-commerce store where you're selling figurines that you get from China or whatever, it's easy to understand that model. The figurines cost me $1.50 a piece. I put them on my site and I sell them for $10 and I keep the difference. You know what I mean? Everybody can understand that and see themselves doing it. But once I start getting into things like affiliate marketing, you know, well, somebody else makes the product. Somebody else does all the customer service. All you have to do is just drive people to go buy it and your job is done. It's still, even though that is a simple model, because it's not something people are familiar with, people have seen stores. They know what stores are like. They've seen people selling mugs. They know what that's like. They can visualize themselves doing that. They can't so much visualize themselves doing affiliate marketing because it just seems too advanced for them somehow. So there are some models that just seem like, I don't want to do this. So I would say e-commerce is by far the model that resonates with my folks. But you've done basically everything there is to do. So can we start with affiliate marketing and you give us what the pros and cons are?
Yeah, sure. So, we're happy to. So with affiliate marketing, I think a lot of people get into it. And the way that you laid it out is really the best way to go. To keep it super simple, create something like a downloadable, you know, valuable resource like a checklist and get the email of the person. So that way you are able to continue that conversation. If you don't make a sale first time around, you can send another email. And I would also say these days, you know, if you can, you want to get the cell phone number, get them following you on social media. So you're in touch in multiple ways. I think the big thing with affiliate marketing is the traffic. Affiliate marketing, I mean, there's two ways you can go with traffic. You either buy it or you get it for free. And free traffic with affiliate marketing takes longer to get than free traffic with selling physical products. And I can explain why that is in a second. And then paid traffic with affiliate marketing can be a little bit more complex than paid traffic with e-commerce physical products. But I think if you are going to do affiliate marketing, the upsides are that once you get something set up, it can be very hands-off. You don't need to worry about customer support. It's a digital product that you're selling. So there's no, you know, inventory, no delays in delivery, anything like that. So it can be good, but there are a few moving parts. You're going to need a website. You're going to need an autoresponder, like you mentioned, AWeber, and a few other sort of bells and whistles to make everything work. But the biggest thing is traffic. So I think there's huge opportunity there, but my big advice would be if you're going to do that, keep it super simple. And this really goes for all the models. Your success will depend on getting traffic and being able to convert that traffic. So there are only a few things that are going to impact those two factors. If you spend all your time worrying about how you're going to get traffic and how you're going to convert it, and try to ignore everything else that you could be doing, then you probably have the best chance of seeing some results with that.
With regard to a website, by the way, I think you could easily do affiliate marketing with no website at all. All you need is a squeeze page. And then you do the entire affiliate marketing just through email follow-ups.
Yes. Yeah. So when I say you'll need a website, you'd need kind of at minimum a squeeze page. You could run the whole thing through... you know, through your email and everything after the fact, but you'll need some way of capturing them. And I say you'll need a website because there are other physical product businesses out there where you won't even need a website. So just comparing it to that.
Okay. So then with e-commerce, there are numerous kinds of e-commerce businesses.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure you probably had your hand in all of them at one time or another. So what are the pros and cons of each? And is there one that you basically feel like is... See, it's hard to say because I could ask you which one's the easiest, but also which one's the most profitable. They may not be the same answer.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think I'll do my best to kind of, you know, really boil this down to simple takeaways for people here. But I look at it as there are really three different types of e-commerce physical product businesses. And one that many people know a lot about these days is selling physical products on Amazon using Fulfilled by Amazon. So this is where you come up with a product. I'll give you an example. Let's say a camera backpack, a special backpack designed to carry your digital camera. And you slap your label on it. Maybe you make a couple of customizations. You buy 500. You manufacture 500 of these things. You send them into Amazon. You get your listing up on Amazon. You don't need a website. People come and buy that camera backpack, and you get paid, you know, the profits of doing that. And that's a great business. We're involved in that in a big way. In fact, a couple of our apps, we started out selling on Amazon, and that way are now in CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, all over the United States. So it can be a great launch pad. However, the downside for people getting started is that you need to make a significant down payment. So normally you're going to have to order 500 units of a product. And if they're costing you, you know, $10 a pop, that's $5,000 of investment in inventory before you've got anything back. You're going to have to come up with and do some work on branding, you know, developing the product. And then this is even before you get to Amazon. And then once you're on Amazon, the competition is quite huge because this has been a popular model for quite a while now. What a lot of people don't realize is that there's a lot of competition and there's not that many big selling products on Amazon. So if you're familiar with Amazon, you'll know there are different categories. There are in fact 39 categories on Amazon that you can sell in. And each one of these categories has got a top 100 product list. And those top 100 products, they're the ones that make all the money. They would make 95% of the money that's made selling on Amazon. So that means, you know, 3,900 big selling products that would make 10 or 20 grand or more per month on Amazon. But there are 2 million sellers trying to break into this sort of selective list of 3,900 products. So the competition is large. The upside can be huge, though. I mean, you've got a traffic ecosystem already built for you. People are, you know, they're just waiting to buy what you've got and they're searching and they're finding it. So, and of course, Amazon takes care of the heavy lifting. You don't need any website. But that would be the first physical product model. And hopefully I haven't overcomplicated that for people here, but that's more or less what the first one is. You want me to dive into the second one, Tom, or you got anything you want to say about
that? Yeah, just give us a little seminar. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So then the second one is drop shipping. And that's basically where you don't hold any inventory. You build up a store, and this is a store of your own. It might be called tomsamazinggadgets.com. And then you put products in that store. So I'll give you a real example. We were selling musical equipment and we had a little microphone sold for about $20. We would buy this thing for about $4, but we wouldn't buy inventory in advance. We'd only buy that inventory once we made the sale. So someone is searching for us on Google, they find our website, or maybe they see one of our ads that we're running on Facebook for the certain product. They buy it. Once they've purchased it, it's all automated, but we send an email automatically to a supplier who in most cases is in China. They receive it and they send out the product to the buyer who might be in Seattle or Houston or God only knows where. It could be anywhere. Now, the beauty of that is you don't have this inventory hurdle. You don't need to buy thousands of dollars worth of inventory when you get started because you're drop shipping. You don't own the inventory. You're selling other people's products. You also don't have to worry about developing your own product. You don't have to worry about Amazon competition either because you're not selling on Amazon. However, you do have to worry about getting traffic because you need to drive your own traffic. You're not tapping into the Amazon ecosystem like we were in the first example I gave you. The other couple of big downsides, which are a real pain, quite frankly, are delivery time. So everyone is accustomed nowadays to ordering something and getting it, you know, almost the next day with Amazon Prime and things like that. Delivery time from China, best case scenario, you're probably looking at 10 days, and oftentimes it's a month. And even if you are, you know, explicit that, look, it's going to take 24 days for your product to arrive, people still get frustrated. Customers still get frustrated waiting. They want it tomorrow. That's one of the downsides. The other is tariffs. You know, this is it's like the goalposts are moving all the time at the moment with more tariffs, and we just don't know where things are headed. So there's that uncertainty, and certain, you know, tariffs have eaten away at profit margins. And of course, you know, paid traffic is what you're using. But that's also a great model. We're still heavily involved with that, and we do large volumes of sales in that per year. So that's the second option. And the third option, and this is the one which I think is probably most cutting edge, I would say. It's not necessarily anything new, but it's kind of been reinvigorated and rejuvenated, you know, over the past year or so, at least in our company. And that's using the dropship model. So the same as the one I just explained, except instead of using Chinese suppliers and Chinese manufacturers, really focusing on products that are already in the USA, and for the most part, USA manufacturers. And there are millions and millions and millions of different products that you can sell that are either manufactured in the USA or already in the USA. So it's kind of like you get the best of dropshipping in that you don't need large down payment. You've got speedy delivery time within a couple of days. There are no tariffs to worry about. You know, you don't have your destiny in Amazon's hands because it's your own store. You're getting all the details of the buyers, but you can still tap into this e-commerce business and do really well with it. And that's something that we're focusing on a lot now, and we're seeing really, really good results with it. And you know, the funny thing for me is that this is something we were doing way back in 2008, 2009. I was selling these big, heavy barber chairs back then, and this, you know, obviously a long time ago, and it wasn't as automated or streamlined as it is now, but it was basically the same model. It's a really, really simple model, which I think helps for people getting started because they can understand what's going on. But there's also unlimited scaling potential and, you know, many other good things to love about it.
Wow. So, all right. Is there anything else in any other kind of approach we should know about, or is that
I mean, the other side of e-commerce is of course, print on demand. That's a form of e-commerce, t-shirts and things like that. That's not something that we do in our business. There's nothing wrong with it. We just hasn't been a path that we've been down. We've focused on these other three types that I've spoken about. The three that we've mentioned, these are ones that we've got, you know, really quite big businesses in. So they're the ones I would sort of recommend people look at.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I personally, my instinct, and I'm just kind of speaking out of my you-know-where here, is that it's easier to scale e-commerce than, you know, that's not print-on-demand than print-on-demand. But I don't know that that's true. I have one of my listeners actually now has a podcast on doing print-on-demand because he's been doing, he bought a training program that I promoted. And last Christmas, we're coming right up on Christmas again. Last Christmas, he brought in $25,000 in revenue in the month of December. Doing
right.
Print on demand, which is, you know, most people would be pretty happy with that kind of result. So it's not to say that it doesn't work. It does work. But I know that your experience has been in e-commerce stuff. All right. Well, I think we'll do, because I know you're going out of town for a while and you're going to be inaccessible. So first of all, I appreciate you fitting me in at the last minute like this before I have to go for Thanksgiving. But, you know, like the beginning of the year, we'll revisit this as people are, let's say, making their New Year's resolutions. Like this year, I'm really going to stick it to my boss. I'll, you know, start something for myself, whatever. We'll come back on and go into more detail about what are the steps? I mean, now people kind of know what they can do, but not how. So maybe we can go to the steps at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, we can flesh out any of these that you want to talk about in more detail. And I'd love to get back on and hopefully I can provide some value to your listeners.
Well, first of all, the travel hacks, that Las Vegas upgrade thing alone has made you an important person in my life. But also, you know, just learning all this stuff from you and watching you do it. And I'm on your email list and I see what you're doing. And in fact, geez, sometime I got to pick your brain. When you promote affiliate as an affiliate, you do it in a unique way that I haven't seen anybody else do. And I'm not sure how you're doing it, but you keep beating me every time we go head to head. So I'm not sure you'll tell me the answer.
I think it's just luck, Tom. I don't think there's any secret there. That's my story anyway. I'm sticking to it.
Well, listen, thanks again, Aiden. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, folks, that's my chat with Aiden Booth. Couple quick things. If you're interested in this stuff, one of my resources you might like is my video where I talk about how you monetize a website. And I've got, yeah, there are like a million ways, but I show you the ones that I use. So you can get that video at tomwoods.com/monetize. Then the second thing is tomorrow in episode 1547, I'm going to be talking to somebody who's a very, very popular YouTube personality in another country other than the U.S. where the libertarian movement has really grown by leaps and bounds. And by leaps and bounds, I don't mean that it started at two people and now it's three and that's 50% growth. I mean really substantial absolute numbers as well. And I want to try and get to the bottom of what's going on and how that happened. And are these sorts of success rates, are they unique to this particular country, or are they something that could be replicated elsewhere if we copy what they're doing? I want to get to the bottom of all that because it's a very interesting story, and I've had numerous people tell me I got to talk to this person. Then I met him at a reception in Vienna a couple of weeks ago, and that just solidified it for me. So I hope you'll tune in for episode 1547 tomorrow, and I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.